And welcome back to Coast. We're going to take your phone calls this hour with McKay Jenkins as we talk about his work on toxic world that we live in, contamination. We'll be back in a moment with you and him on Coast to Coast AM. McKay Jenkins with us. McKay, just heard that commercial for the law firm. My gosh, it's everywhere, isn't it?
You're talking about the Roundup?
Yeah.
I just am finishing a book on genetically modified food right now, and Roundup is sprayed on millions and millions of acres of our food crops right now. And if they're starting to link that with these kinds of diseases, then
oh my God,
we could be in trouble. The World Health Organization calls Roundup a probable human carcinogen. So, yeah, I mean, this is a real thing. This is something that people really need to pay attention to.
I'd rather eat a wholesome vegetable with weeds all around it. Wouldn't you?
Absolutely. And you know what? If that was the case, then we'd have a lot fewer problems. You know, this Roundup that's spread on all these crops kills milkweed, which is the one thing that monarch butterflies eat. So I don't know if your listeners probably know this, but monarch butterfly populations are
dwindling.
Like 4%. They're down to about 4% of what they use. And that's because the one plant that they need to eat on their migration from Mexico up to the United States is being eliminated by all these pesticides we spray on our crops.
We're going to take your phone calls with McKay Jenkins, your stories as well. Maybe you've come across stuff like this. There seems to be a big epidemic of mold in people's homes. What's causing that?
Actually, that's a good question. I mean, you actually can't answer the cause of that. What I'm concerned about is the things that people might do to get rid of it, because mold is one thing, and then when people freak out and start spraying stuff on the mold, they think that they're getting rid of one problem, but they're just replacing it with a different problem. So I would recommend that you think pretty hard about the stuff that you do to remediate these things. Mold is an issue, but the stuff that kills mold can also be an issue.
Is bleach harmful to breathe?
Yeah, of course it is. Of course it is. It's a problem, and you know, bleach is a really toxic substance that does what it does really well. It kills everything it touches.
That's right.
You also don't want that stuff all over your house, because then you're going to be breathing that in yourself.
All right, let's take some calls here for you. Let's go to Lex on our Skype line in Hamilton, Ontario. Lex, go ahead.
Hi, guys.
Hey, Lex.
I was wondering, can you endorse do you endorse any companies that supply the alternatives to, let's say, household cleaners, like, you know, the Windex or whatever, the soaps? Like, I did come across a company a few years back, Melaleuca. That's the only one I know right now. Like, can you endorse any other companies that we can go shopping at?
Well, that's a good question. You know, in the book, I actually interview a scientist who works for a company called Seventh Generation, which is a company based in Burlington, Vermont, and they make products that you can find in most supermarkets, things like laundry detergents, household cleaners. These things are designed at the chemical level to be very benign. They're very non-toxic. But the other thing I like about that company is that they know that one of the big problems is the lack of information on labels. So, you know, whereas one product that you buy that has toxic chemicals has no information on it, if you buy a product from Seventh Generation, there is almost too much information. They give you so much information about the ingredients in their products. So they're banking on you being an educated consumer wanting information, and that if you get information and trust it, you'll buy their product. And that's the kind of company that I can get behind, which is, you know, saying, look, you want to know what's in it? We'll tell you everything you want to know. Like, if anything, I would like to reward companies that provide information. Even if they tell you there's bad stuff in it, I'd like to know that. What really bothers me is when there's bad stuff in it and no information. So Seventh Generation is a company that is well worth looking into. They are open and honest about their ingredients, and the products are quite benign.
Well, look what they've done to us with GMOs. They won't label.
Well, they won't label, and this is the thing that really bothers me about this kind of relationship between industry and government. So, you know, this is the place you're seeing it now is with GMOs. So people say, look, we would like to know what ingredients that are going into our basic foods that we eat every day are genetically engineered. And not only are there no labels on it, but now there's a movement in Congress to actually prohibit labels on it. So it's not just that you don't, you know, just by coincidence don't have information, but now they're trying to pass laws that will not allow information. It's like laws that make it illegal to take pictures of industrial slaughterhouses or things where you know really bad stuff is going on in there, but you can't find out because it's illegal to get information about this stuff. So for me, I mean, this is me speaking as a journalist. It always bothers me when someone says, we're not going to tell you. In fact, we're going to make it impossible for you to find anything out. That is the stuff that really makes me crazy, because all of us are educated, smart people. And if we just had information, we could actually make much better decisions about things.
Okay, to the phones now we go. We go to Petaluma, California. Tom's with us west of the Rockies. Tom, go ahead, sir.
Oh, thank you, George.
Sure thing.
Thank you for doing this show. I had a question about my question was about the effects, cumulative effects of lead and mercury. With my understanding, I was corrected by a researcher from Australia, Dr. O'Brien, that it can multiply, you know, hundreds of times in its toxic impact, and yet a combination of lead and mercury. So I'm wondering what effect that might have with vaccines. I've been able to find out no one's checking for a body burden of lead in conjunction with the vaccines and reactions like autism. But there's also, I believe, a combination of toxic chemicals that work synergistically with infectious agents like mycoplasmas. Hence my information, if you do a search on mold mycoplasma, you'll find a lot of these molds, the toxic ones, are growing these mycoplasmas like a petri dish, especially the genetically modified ones that were patented by the United States Army. Mycoplasma fermentaeus, the Gulf War vets are sick with it. And I'll take my question and answer off air about the effects of lead and mercury.
Well, the lead, we talked a little bit about that in terms of what it can do because of just the Flint situation. Lead specifically, when it gets in the system of young children, it affects your brain.
That's correct. It's very, very dangerous for young children to be exposed to lead. The caller's question is actually a very, very good one. And if I can, I'd like to expand it beyond lead and mercury.
Of course.
Sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead. No, you.
Well, he recommends that you look into the synergistic effects of two chemicals working in tandem. So if you get exposed to lead here and you get exposed to mercury there, we know each one of those on their own is a problem. But then the question is, what do they do in combination with each other? Now, let's think about this beyond that. Let's say you have a little bit of lead and a little bit of mercury and a little bit of pesticides from your neighbor's house and a little bit of dryer sheet chemicals and a little bit of phthalate from your drinking water and a little bit of toluene from your cosmetics or whatever it is, and you start adding these things up, we don't really know all that much about each one of these things individually, but we know a whole lot less about what they do in combination with each other once they're inside our bodies. And this is where he uses the word synergy, which is a really interesting one. It's almost like a multiplier effect. Like, what would happen if you take this and a little bit of that and a little bit of this and you stick it all in your body all at the same time and do it chronically over time? This is kind of the thing we're talking about. We just don't know enough individually, and we definitely don't know much about the cumulative effect of these things. And this is where my sense is that you're starting to see these, you can graph the climb in cancer rates. You can graph the climb in hormone disruption. You know, girls are having puberty at an earlier and earlier age.
Yeah.
Boys are having low sperm counts. I mean, there are all kinds of things that are happening with our collective hormone systems. It's not just cancer here, after all. We're talking about neurological problems, developmental problems. These things are all tied, I think, to this ubiquitous climb in these chemicals in combination with each other.
Catherine is in Belmont, California. Welcome to the program, Catherine. Go ahead.
Oh, yes. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure,
I'm just going to take you off speakerphone. I have had several encounters with formaldehyde.
Ugh.
I once had to flee an apartment that I was living in. It got worse as the weather was warm. It was like baking the chemicals into the air, and I went away on vacation for 2 weeks in the summer, came back, and I had to move out. I mean, it was headache, immediate nausea, nose burning, throat dripping. It was awful. And then a few years after that, I moved into another living situation where there was laminate hardwood flooring, and the formaldehyde in the glue created the same reaction. And I have a friend who just remodeled her home. I walk in, there's wallpaper all throughout the house. I can smell it and react to it in the wallpaper. It's everywhere.
Can I respond to that? I'm so glad you brought that up, because the formaldehyde, most people think that the only time they ever see formaldehyde is when they're in junior high school and there's a frog in a jar or something like that.
Nope.
We know it as a preservative. But what your caller has just mentioned is that formaldehyde is an adhesive. So it's a glue that is used to make way more things than you can ever imagine.
It's an embalming fluid too, isn't it?
Well, it goes into plywood in your house. So if you think about this, now think about, we were just talking about the invisible contact you have with toxic chemicals. You may think that, oh, sure, the ammonia under my sink is a problem, but you might never think that the plywood that built my house is all glued together with formaldehyde. Now think about this. You're in your kitchen, and your four walls and your flooring and your ceiling are all made with plywood that is glued together with formaldehyde. You're basically sitting in a box that is locked in with formaldehyde. And this thing became news. If you recall, after Hurricane Katrina, you had all these people that were, their houses were blown up. So FEMA came in and put all these people in FEMA trailers, like these people. And there were so much formaldehyde in those trailers, these people couldn't live in them. They were spiking formaldehyde in their bodies just from living in trailers because they were all sheathed in formaldehyde plywood. It's in laminate, you know, furniture, it's in laminate flooring. You see, so this is another invisible thing that we don't think about, and yet it's absolutely everywhere we go. So that was a very good point. I'm glad you brought that up.
Dangerous. Extremely toxic to a lot of people. A lot of people. Right. You had talked to... Go ahead.
Formaldehyde is also, I think, a triggering chemical. So she was mentioning that she's very sensitive to it. And as I understand it, formaldehyde exposure is something that can also make your body generally sensitive to lots of other chemicals. So you may have a big exposure to formaldehyde, and suddenly you find yourself really sensitive to, like I said, to dryer sheets or to the Xerox chemicals or to other things. But formaldehyde is kind of the trigger chemical that makes your body extra sensitive.
What about these lawn chemicals? What about them? You were going to talk about that, and are they dangerous?
Well, lawn chemicals is kind of a little pet peeve of mine. So there have been all kinds of studies on lawn chemicals. A lot of the chemicals that people spray on lawns are also the chemicals. You mentioned Roundup that is sprayed on these farm crops. Roundup is called glyphosate. There's also something called 2,4-D, which is a chemical you can buy in any hardware store. And it's called, you know, it's a broadleaf, meaning you spray it on stuff to kill stuff that's not grass. So it kills clover, it kills dandelions, it kills that sort of thing that you want to get rid of. And you can buy it in any hardware store. 2,4-D, for those of you who are of a certain age, will remember something in Vietnam known as Agent Orange. Agent Orange had two chemicals in it. It had 2,4-D and 2,4-5-T. These are the two components of Agent Orange. 2,4-5-T has been banned, but 2,4-D is absolutely everywhere. It's in every hardware store. They spray it on all our food crops. It was half of Agent Orange, and we spray it all over the place. So there are two places that this shows up and real areas of concern. It's in our food, but it's also in our lawn chemicals. And there have been studies about things, like if you talk to your veterinarian about the higher incidence in things called lymphomas in pets, they're concerned that pets roll around in this grass that's been sprayed with these herbicides, and they're getting them all over their body. Because, you know, when you walk on your lawn, you get them on the bottom of your feet, but if a dog rolls around, they're getting their entire body covered. One study that I read for this book talks about children that grow up in lawns that are treated with chemicals. They have a much higher incidence of these soft tissue tumors, kind of like the one I had, than kids who grow up on lawns that are not. And if I can, just take one moment and talk about the historical roots of this. Like, you have to ask yourself, why is it that you think you need to spray chemicals on your grass? Why is it that we think that a lawn with one kind of plant in it is the ideal, like the aesthetic ideal? Like, having clover, I'm talking about the East Coast now, we have clover all over the place. Clover is a fine little plant that sits in your garden, and it doesn't grow very big, and it's no big deal. But people are obsessed with killing it. And therefore, they're going to expose their kids and their dogs and themselves to these chemicals rather than just having a little plant that just is growing happily in your lawn. So part of the problem with these chemicals is that we've become addicted to a certain kind of a lifestyle.
Yeah, it's got to look like a golf course.
Don't get me started on golf courses. Golf courses are some of the most toxic landscape in the entire country.
Oh, really?
I talked to this one guy who's an ecologist in New York State. He said if you scraped the top inch off of a golf course, if you like cleared it off with a front-end loader, you'd have to take it to a toxic waste dump. There's no way you can keep grass looking like that without saturating it with chemicals. And of course, the minute it rains, all those chemicals are going to run right off that golf course and run into our creeks and run into our drinking water. So golf is like one of the most toxic sports that there is. I hate to break it to you, but that you can't have a golf course look like that without making it completely chemically saturated.
What about some of these fake plastic lawns that people, you know, are putting in?
You know, I don't know. I mean, it's like fake plastic Christmas trees. So, you know, the Christmas
as long as they're not aluminum.
Yeah, right.
Remember those?
Yeah. Well, so which should you have in your house, a natural Christmas tree or a plastic Christmas tree? Well, the natural Christmas tree is going to be sprayed with all these herbicides to keep stuff off the tree, and then you bring that big tree, saturated tree, into your house, you've got that problem. But if you bring in a tree that was made in China and it's plastic, now you've got all the plastic in your house. So the like the Christmas tree dilemma is a real problem. It's like, I'm kind of damned if I do and damned if I don't. It's really tough to know.
Let's go to Cliff in Bristol, Tennessee now. Cliff, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hey, guys. Great, great show. Very
informative.
Thank you, Clifford. Let me just ask you a quick question. Have you heard anything about Hart's pet products causing neurological problems in the pets, like seizures?
Well, we have heard one thing about Chinese jerky's treats for dogs have caused serious problems, and dogs have died. I haven't heard anything specifically about Hart's. Have you, McKay?
Well, I also don't know about the company specific. I mean, I know the company. I don't know any about the charges, but I do know that a lot of the things that people put on their dogs, whether to prevent ticks or prevent fleas or whatever it is, these are basically insecticides. So obviously what they're meant to do is to kill insects, in this case, fleas or ticks. And you know, when you these things are very toxic, and you're putting them directly on a dog's body. So I will tell you that these insecticides, as a class, as a large group of chemicals, are things that scientists are very concerned about. And when you spray them outside, you get them outside, but they also drift into your house. But then when you spray them in your house, like I remember having a dog that had fleas, and we would use what they called a flea bomb. Like you'd close the doors in a room and set this thing off, and it would just basically
wipe out the house.
Wipe out right? The entire house. And now you say, great, I got rid of my fleas, and we did. All the fleas are gone. But then you have to think, like, this stuff is now like powder all over the house.
That's right. You're breathing it in.
Right. And so it's important to remember that an insecticide is designed to kill things, oftentimes by attacking the neurology of the thing, of the target. And if it can kill a bug, it's probably not going to be great for you. So you want to really think hard about using these things and limit the exposure to your pets and to yourself.
We used to buy a Science Diet, Iams and Purina, and, you know, spent a little more money, but those foods seem to go pretty well for us.
Yeah, well, that's food. I mean, food is a whole different thing. We're talking here about things you put on your dog to kill the bug.
Yeah.
That's a separate thing.
What about those flea collars?
Yeah, well, I mean, you're stretching the limit of my expertise.
That's a chemical around your dog's neck all the time, 24/7.
With a chemical on it designed to kill bugs. Now, it's important to remember that if something is designed to kill one thing, it doesn't mean it only kills that one thing. It's also dangerous for everything.
Everything, in some form or fashion. Stay with us, McKay. We're going to come back in a moment and take final phone calls here on Coast to Coast AM. And then, of course, you got to tell us where we can get the book, Contamination. And I say it like that because it's not contaminated. It's C-O-N-T-A-M-I. And then nation. We're the nation. Contamination. We'll be back. Okay, welcome back. McKay Jenkins with us, our final segment here and your final calls. But McKay, for people who want to pick up this book and learn more about this toxic world we live in, where do they get it?
Well, the book is called Contamination, and they can get it pretty much anywhere. I'd recommend that they get it at their local bookstore. Support your local book dealers. If you don't have a local bookstore nearby, you can always get it on Amazon, of course.
Those local bookstores are going away slowly and slowly, aren't they?
They sure are. And I'll tell you something, local bookstores are like libraries.
They're the greatest supporters
of local writers and local books. They actually know what they're selling. It's like you go to, you know, a big box store and they might as well be selling you soap. They don't really know a whole lot about books. So just try to support your local bookstores.
Indeed. Now, since you've been this whole episode that has happened to you, what are you doing now?
Well, what I'm doing now is I'm still teaching. I teach at the University of Delaware, so I teach a lot of classes on this stuff, on what's called environmental humanities. So we look at environmental problems from all kinds of perspectives, but try to get kids to understand about these things, understand the history of how we came to be the way we are. I've also written another book called Poison Spring with a guy who worked at the EPA for 25 years, talking about how industry has really muscled government into turning the other way. And I also, as I mentioned, finished writing a book about genetically modified food. That should be out in about a year. So this.
Okay, you let us know on that one. We'll get you back on for that.
Yeah.
Let's go to Baltimore. Charles is with us on Coast to Coast. Hi, Charles. Go ahead.
Yes, thank you very much.
Sure.
I agree with you about the modified food. That is, ew, no good.
No good.
But okay, if we didn't have chemicals, how would we make things? You know, that's one thing. And what was the purpose of killing the insects anyway? Did the insects do more harm to the crops than what the chemicals to prevent the problem are doing?
Well, they thought so. They thought so. Go ahead, McKay.
Well, this is a good question. I'm glad to hear you. I'm in Baltimore, too, so I'm glad to hear you must be a neighbor. So you bring up a couple questions. Like, growing food is something that people have been doing for a very, very long time. Human beings have been growing food for 10,000 years. The reason there's so many chemicals now is because we've decided to grow a certain kind of food. So I don't know if you've ever driven across the United States, but my family and I drove from Baltimore all the way to Vancouver last summer. And, you know, you leave Maryland, as we did, and you start driving west, and you basically will only come into contact with about three different crops. You'll come into contact with corn, with soybeans, and with wheat. And you can drive for about 1,500 miles, and that's all you're going to see. That's all we grow. And the reason for that is because these crops are grown to create processed foods and fast foods and animal feed and things like that. You know, the farms that are creating our actual produce, like our tomatoes and our lettuce and our cabbage and our asparagus and all that, those are small local farms. And those guys, especially if they're organic farms, are not using all those chemicals. So the chemicals that we're talking about, that we're worried about, are used at a huge scale on huge industrial-sized farms that are growing things mainly to create cheap processed food or cheap fast food. So it's not really a question just about the chemicals. It's also a question about what kind of food we're growing, what kind of food we choose to eat, what kind of food and food processing the government decides to support. The government's putting a lot of money into these industrial foods and not into small local farms. The local farmers have really had a hard time over the last 50 years because these industrial farms are getting so much of the money because they're creating so much of this bad food that we're eating.
Well, and they're getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And look at all these stories. I mean, I just had a story before you came on about Starbucks with Listeria in some of their muffin sandwiches. I mean, this is happening all the time, all over the country.
Well, it's really a great point. I hope we get to talk about this sometime, because the industrial food thing, I mean, people, just like they need to think about their chemicals, if you think about what you actually eat every day, what you buy in a supermarket, what you buy at a fast food restaurant, that stuff also has very little information attached to it. So when you eat a fast food hamburger, you'd be really surprised to find what it took to make that hamburger, how that animal was treated, how that animal was fed, if it was fed corn, where did that corn come from, what kind of pesticides were sprayed on that corn. The way we eat, and this is nobody's individual fault, this has been happening nationwide for 70 years. We have built an industrial food system, an industrial chemical system. It all makes the industry work really well, and a few companies are getting extremely wealthy on this, but it is not in the best interest of our health, our individual health or our public health. We have, you know, some extremely high obesity rates. We have high diabetes rates. We have all kinds of health problems that are all a result of eating the way we do. So the chemical thing is very connected to all the other things, the way we eat, the way we build our houses, the way we clean things, the way we deal with, you know, things on our lawn. Like, all this stuff is tied together, and it's worth thinking deeply about all of these different things.
Let's go to West Virginia. Dana's with us now, east of the Rockies. Hey, Dana, good morning.
Thank you, Mr. Norrie, and your guest.
Very welcome.
Absolutely wonderful guest. I have the multiple chemical sensitivities.
Oh, boy.
If you hear my voice, I've been out and about in the world today, and that's what happens. I don't breathe. It's like when I get in these chemicals like the fabric sheets, perfume, even if it doesn't have a smell, it affects me. Mm. And it feels like the part of my brain, it feels like it makes me angry.
Yeah. Well, and tell me if this is your experience, too. The thing that I heard from many people with multiple chemical sensitivity is that they feel sick, and yet nobody believes them. Like, they say, I don't know why it is. I know there's something wrong with me, and their doctors can't figure it out, and their neighbors don't figure it out, and they feel isolated. They feel really kind of alone in the world because this is something that we haven't figured out how to put a name to. So you can't just say, you know, I have a cold and take a pill and feel better. You have this multiple. So you go to church and you sit next to somebody who's got some kind of perfume and it sends you into a tailspin. And people think you're crazy, but you're not crazy. What you are is sensitive to the chemicals.
Yes. I go to our state toxicologist here at University of West Virginia, and he told me probably about 15 years ago that I would probably get to the point that I wouldn't even be able to take pharmaceuticals.
Mm.
That's happened.
So your body is very, very sensitive, it sounds.
Oh,
sure,
yeah.
Is. A lot of people.
And it affects these chemicals. It affects your breathing. It affects your thought. And our highway department here in West Virginia sprays Roundup on the highway to kill the plants.
Right.
That's put me to bed 2 weeks every year.
Do you know something? That's a very good point. That's another. So we've been talking all night about the invisible thing. So you may not think about it. You know what you're talking about, but everybody lives in a state where the state highway department is spraying for the weeds, either in the medians or on the sides of the roads. And you're talking about in Maryland, there are tens of thousands of acres that are managed by the State Highway Administration. Now, thankfully, in Maryland, they're actually starting to do things like cut back on their sprays and planting native plants. They're doing really enlightened things. But right across the border in places like Pennsylvania, West Virginia, they just spray and spray and spray and spray. And you don't have the choice. Like, they're not asking you whether you want them to spray. The woman I talked to for this book who has multiple chemical sensitivity, when they spray for things in Maryland, she has to go two states away. She has to drive all the way to North Carolina to get away from these sprays because they're spraying from helicopters and from airplanes, and this stuff is not in her control.
I live in remote habitat of the National Forest here in West Virginia.
Yeah.
And back in the 90s, the United States government sprayed us with experimental herbicides, pesticides, bacterias, viruses, and assorted chemicals.
Mm.
It was all experimental. We're like the big giant laboratory here in the mountains.
Well, that's true. And, you know, in Oregon, this other book that I wrote called Poison Spring with this guy from the EPA, he talked about the same thing happening in Oregon where they were spraying this chemical I mentioned before, 2,4-D, which was part of Agent Orange. They sprayed it all over the forest in Oregon, and women started to complain about having miscarriages in these towns. So, again, this is the problem, is that people feel like they can't control their own lives because these chemicals are absolutely everywhere. And I'm really sympathetic. I understand that you're suffering. It's a real problem.
McKay, as you look at all of this, is there any legislation underway to try to protect us?
It's an excellent question, and I don't know if your listeners are particularly politically active, but if they are interested in being politically active, this is a thing to think about. The companies that control these products, the companies that make these chemicals, they want to have all of the legislation focused in one place, and that is Congress, because they have absolute control over Congress. And the way you can see that is that the legislation that regulates these chemicals is called TSCA, the Toxic Substances Control Act. It has not been changed in 40 years. Now, if you think about what's gone on in our industry, in our consumer culture in 40 years, it's grown exponentially, but the legislation is no different than it was in the early 1970s. This is a joke. This is an absolute joke. And because these companies control Congress, you know, different groups, different states have been trying to get some regulations at the state level, but that's very difficult because the industries also are extremely powerful in state governments. So I think, you know, the thing to do if people want to get active is to think about this TSCA reform, Toxic Substances Control Act, which is, there is legislation pending. It just can't get off the ground because not enough people know about it, and the companies are very much against changing the law. They want to keep it just the way it is. So, you know, people can shop better. They can get a little smarter about the things they buy. They can get a little more active and talk to people about control or changing some of this legislation at the federal level, which would be really great. And if they can't do that, then they should get involved in thinking about it at the state level. Like in this caller from West Virginia, like it would be really great. Poor West Virginia has just got so many things. They've got the coal mining. They've got the pesticides. If you can just simply try to get the people's voice heard.
They don't have as much coal mining as they used to, that's for sure.
That's for sure. That's for sure.
That's changing. Let's go to first-time caller Barbara in Petaluma, California as well. Hello, Barbara.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
You're very welcome.
I'm wondering how the smart meters and the marijuana that we have to be exposed to constantly. I'm a cancer survivor. Also, I guess, an unknown heart attack survivor.
Well, good for you.
And
keep fighting.
Yeah, well, I still have to kick. There's nothing they can do for my heart attack because my heart's not viable, probably from the cancer.
Stem cells. We'll give you stem cells. They're working in the heart, believe it or not.
Are they really?
Oh, my God, yeah.
I'll have to talk to my heart doctor about it.
Yes, definitely talk to him about that.
He was the one that found my breast cancer 5 years ago.
Jeez.
My heart doctor, a nuclear stress test.
You've had a lot. Well, let's talk a little bit about smart meters. It's not your expertise, McKay, but we do have a lot of people concerned about those new kinds of meters that they're attaching to the home.
And to tell me what the concern is.
They give off things.
Oh, I see.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, this is so similar to things like living under power lines. And
yes.
Like that. Yeah, I mean, I this is beyond my expertise, but it is an interesting thing to think about. We mentioned before that, you know, for a long, long time, human beings cooked their food outside. Now we cook our food inside an enclosed space. So we're not just cooking food, but we're breathing the fumes of the fire. It's hard to think about it, but burning a fire in your living space, which is something we all do, is not something that we are, you know, biologically evolved to do. We're also not biologically evolved to live in these boxes with electrical currents going all around our houses. Now, I have absolutely no idea what the health impacts of that are, but it's weird. I mean, it's evolutionarily, it's weird. It's just like it's weird to hold a cell phone up to your head for hours every day. Now, you know, people
I wouldn't advise that, that's for sure.
There are people, like the head of the Cancer Institute at the University of Pittsburgh said, you know, I know that the evidence is not 100% in, but I'm going to recommend that everybody on our staff not hold a cell phone up to their head because
yeah.
I'm concerned about the electrical fields that are going through people's brains. And, you know, the problem with this is that the evidence is never 100% clear. So you're always going to have a debate when you talk about this stuff. But common sense and a little bit of, like, historical awareness should recommend that you be cautious with all of these things.
Wayne in Tacoma, Washington now. Welcome to the program, Wayne.
Thank you, George and McKay. This has got to be one of the most important programs that's ever aired.
And it is.
Dr. Bob Moore, there are so many different problems out there with the pollutants, with the lead, and with the air, and with the dust and the things in the environment. And I'd like you to address the alternatives, such as the electrostatic air filters, and some of them put out a little bit of ozone, I know. And then there's the ozone air cleaners themselves that actually put out ozone in the air and drop all the particles in the air to the ground. But there are some negative effects to that. And then when it comes to mowing all this grass along the highways and that, well, they've got hydro axes and machines to do that with, so they can do that. And then with the lead pipes in the old cities and the old sewer systems, why not put in like a WTPA program in some of these poor cities and completely tear up all the old sidewalks and put like a 20-foot trench underneath the sidewalks where they can run all the different utilities and never have to tear up the roads again?
You know something, I think that is an absolutely brilliant idea.
That's like, too smart.
I love solutions that fix multiple problems. So let's say we want to get rid of lead and we want to bring jobs back. Like, what a great idea to have a double-edged sword here working for positive change in both ways. Imagine if you could get, you know, hundreds of people in Flint to give them work to replace all these lead pipes. If same thing in Baltimore. We have a huge employment problem in Baltimore. Huge employment problems in places like Detroit, all these old cities.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that would be a brilliant idea. I do think, you know, there's the thing is people want to fix things for their individual lives, which is great. Get filters for your water, filters for your air. That's fine. Sort of like the climate change problem, which is you can drive a fuel-efficient car and do your part, but you also have to have systemic change. So taking care of your air inside your house is fine, but if your neighbor is spraying pesticides on his grass, that stuff is still going to keep coming into your house. So you've got to somehow convince your neighbor to stop spraying pesticides, or better yet, make pesticides like impossible to buy. because, you know, it would be a whole lot better for us and everything else out there in the natural world not to have these chemicals everywhere.
Once again, industry wins.
Okay. Industry wins by convincing us that we need the stuff that they're selling, and the truth is we don't need it, and we've got to resist the constant barrage of calls to use all this stuff. I mean, I've got these college students of mine, every single one of them is drinking out of a plastic water bottle. And, you know, I'm not 100 years old, I'm 50, but I can remember growing up, there was no such thing as water bottles. If you needed to drink, you went to the water fountain, and you got free water that was also regulated and pretty good. Now every one of my college students is drinking out of a plastic bottle, so they're getting water that is actually being contaminated by these plastics, and they can't imagine any alternative.
Remember the old saying, without chemicals, life itself would be impossible.
Exactly. Right.
They sure maximize that, didn't they?
They sure do. Better living through chemistry, you know, that's what it is. I think the idea is that we've all become kind of collectively addicted to these things, and it's worth trying to take a step back and unplugging a little bit, getting away from these things, and just using a little bit of common sense and kind of taking a breath before you buy. Like, think about what it is that you're putting on your laundry, what it is you're putting on your mattress, what it is you're putting on your lawn, and see if you can do without it. A lot of these things are actually money-saving ideas because they will allow you not to buy stuff that you don't need anyway. You know, you don't need to spray some kind of peach smell into your house to make it smell nice. You just need to open your window, right? Save yourself $5 and save yourself breathing and all that plastic stuff.
McKay, we're out of time, but I want to thank you for being part of the program. Very beneficial. And when you're done with your GMO book, let us know, okay?
I sure will. Thanks so much for having me. It's really a pleasure.
Great to have you on the program. Now, you all know how I feel about coincidences. I don't think they exist. Up next, we're going to be talking with Dr. Bernard Beitman about connecting with coincidence. This is going to be interesting.